Welcome to an enlightening podcast from IslamPodcasts.com. We encourage our listeners to please comment and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please remind your family and friends to also visit IslamPodcasts.com for engaging discussions on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran, tafsir, seerah, and much more. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Podcasts on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran tafsir, and seerah are available at islampodcasts.com as well as on iTunes. Rate, review, and comment and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please subscribe, share, and tell a friend about islampodcasts.com as well as rate, review of iTunes.
على رسوله الكريم الحمد لله رب العالمين حمد الشاكرين رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام.
What I will be talking about today, inshallah, about major issues that we have been discussing today and the events that are happening in the world. The revolutions in the Arab world, and inshallah they will extend to the rest of the Muslim world, they are creating a new environment. They are creating new conditions. And they are bringing something to the world to talk about. There is the rise of Islam that is happening and that the people are talking about and discussing. So we need to really pinpoint the issue. Is it true that these revolutions eventually will end up in Islam? And what does Islam provide to the world? Is Islam going to bring mercy, some prosperity, something good? Or is it really a threat? Do we have to fear Islam? There is a scare being distributed in the world that the rise of Islam could be a threat. So we need to discuss that. And then at the end of the day, we need to discuss what is my role? What do I have to do? Where do I fit in all of this scenario? And not only because we are here in this conference or because we are activists or we are indulged in certain activity or so, but because we are witnessing a historical change. We are in a place where history is being made today, and there is a transition, a historical transition. And this transition, brothers and sisters, is not a transition of power from Bashar al-Assad to Farouk Bashar, or from Ali Abdullah Saleh to Abdul Hadi Mansour, or from Hosni Mubarak to Ahmed Shafiq, or even Mohamed Morsi for that matter. No, it's a transition of a world order. We are witnessing a transition of a world order, an order that has been dominated in the last century and the current century by three major ideologies or ideas, or some of them are not even ideology. One of them is, here, let me look at this. This is socialism, I think. The green one is socialism. Socialism was part of the last century, and we saw the end of socialism as an ideology, as a state, when the Soviet Union collapsed and it was dismantled. And nationalism, which was at one point in the middle of the last century when Nazism and fascism and the also called nationalistic ideas were almost dominating the world for a while, and this was like a spike that went up and went down. And the Arab nationalism and the Turkish nationalism and all of these things are, those isms are dying. And then we have one more, which is capitalism, and which was flourishing during the Cold War against the socialism and the Soviet Union. But then, although Fukuyama mentioned in 1991 that we have to celebrate the end of history, the collapse of Soviet Union and socialism gave rise to the ultimate ideology of the world, but nevertheless, we started seeing the crackdown of capitalism, and it's falling down. And this very conference here, the brothers who organized this conference for Hizb al-Tahrir, they have talked about this even before the revolution started creating this environment back in 2009 when we held our first conference, The Fall of Capitalism and the Rise of Islam. There is capitalism today is no longer provides a base for continuation or sustenance of the world order. Capitalism today provides a phenomenon that is collapsing in front of our eyes, and this is exactly what Fukuyama himself mentioned in 2008 at the verge of the financial crisis in the United States, where we are witnessing the collapse of this great giant which is called capitalism in front of our own eyes. So the world today is witnessing a transition of a world order, an ideological transition, because there is a vacuum. Today, capitalism cannot fill this vacuum. And capitalism, when I talk about capitalism, I also talk about democracy, because democracy is the so-called the beautiful face of an ugly body. So there is an ugly body of capitalism, and they put a face in front of it, they call it democracy, they give it this type of image, although the real image of democracy is what behind it, which is at the end of the day, the injustice and the capitalistic machine that rips the people of their wealth. So that's what we are witnessing. That's why this event today is so important. It's not because we have so few people or many. The issue here doesn't count by the number of people who are attending a conference. The issue is by what is it that we are witnessing? What is it that we are talking about? What is it that we are discussing? What is it that we are witnessing today? We are witnessing a transition, a historical transition, from an ideology that is falling down and an ideology that is coming up and that's rising. And when we say it is rising, and we indeed mean that, and we see it, the revolutions in the Arab world, they have opened a new era, if you will. They opened a new environment. They created new conditions. Those revolutions, today they have not reached their ultimate goal, and they are still crawling at the beginning. Anyone who thinks that the revolution in Egypt has just brought a president today, I don't know who's going to win the election today, whether it's the old colleague of Hosni Mubarak or the new person from the Ikhwan Muslimin or the Brotherhood, it doesn't matter. What is that? But the revolution is still at its infancy. The same thing in Tunis or in Libya or in Syria. And what we are seeing in Syria today, what the brother was talking about, this is all the cost and the price we are paying for this 100 years of tyranny that the Muslim Ummah or the people in the Middle East or the people of the world, for that matter, have allowed tyranny to prevail. When tyranny prevails for a while, the cost of removing that tyranny is very expensive. So we are today paying the price of what we have been silent for the long time. This is not the price or the cost of installing a new system yet. The price in fact, for installing the new system of Islam, I will not call it a price with a C. I will call it a prize with a Z. There will be a reward for bringing Islam back into this world, and I mean that, and we'll talk about it in more detail. Just a testimony, this is not what I am saying here, I'm bringing this testimony from a person this is Montgomery Watt, where he talks about what he expects when he sees Islam. In Quran and in the Islamic vision that we are talking about, there is a lot to learn. There is lots of values to install. This Islam that we are talking about, that Islam that some people are scaring us off and telling us it's a threat, there is nothing to fear, because there is a lot in this Quran, in this Sunnah, in this Islam that the world needs. And there are many quotations here which I'm not going to talk about, but I will start mentioning at least why we think that the world needs Islam, why Islam is not a threat. Where is the threat in reality? And in fact, there is this type of illusion and deception when they talk to us, oh, you are bringing Sharia to the world. The Sharia is bad. Sharia is anti-human. All of these slogans, Rumsfeld was saying, oh, the caliphate will cause a threat to the entire Western threat. And I tell Rumsfeld, and of course Rumsfeld was the resonating the talks and the rhetoric of Condoleezza Rice, of George Bush, of Cheney, of Wolfowitz, of all of these Western big machines or big capitalistic gangs, if you will. They were talking, caliphate or the khilafah is a threat. Threat to whom? Is it a threat to the people who die out of these causes? Look at this. It's about 1 million people who, and I brought these numbers just to show that those are the ones that are related to ideological framework. This is not simply people who die when someone dies out of tobacco. Poor diet. Poor diet means poverty. Lack of insurance. I don't have insurance. I cannot go to hospital. And I always bring this story for a woman. One day, in fact, this was about 2 months ago in the Time magazine, a woman decided to not to go through cancer treatment because what she has to pay for the cancer treatment and at the end of the day she may die is much more than the wealth that she has accumulated for her daughter. So she decided, I'm not going to be treated. Let my wealth be at least sustained for someone who can continue to live after me. That is real threat. That's real threat to humanity. When you have drug-induced, this is the amount of death, suicides, alcohol, homicides, HIV, virus, viral disease, all of these diseases that are real threat. Because when I say it's a threat, when somebody tells me Islam is a threat, come on, let's be serious. A threat to what? To my life? Does Islam provide an environment where alcoholism is abundant so that I die out of my liver problems? Does Islam provide an environment where people are on drugs? Does Islam provide an environment where people commit suicide and so on? That's ridiculous. Islam doesn't do all of that. Islam is a system that fills the body, the soul and the mind with spirituality. It fills the body with satisfaction. It brings justice to the person, so you know always that you can get your justice. So there is no reason for you to go on drug. There is no reason for you to be on alcohol. There is no reason for you to be on poor diet. You are no longer poor, because if you don't have food for that day, the entire community is responsible for feeding you. It's not only the state or the society or the wealth that comes from the society. It is the whole homogeneous type of society. So Islam is not the threat. Islam is the justice on the other hand. That is the real threat. That is the threat. That is what the people should be fearing about. That's what the people should be looking for to get out of this mess. This is a mess that we have been indulged in. And bringing another issue. There are African Americans here. Unfortunately, we have to give names. All of us are people. Why do I have to distinguish the people based on their color? Why do I have to look at the person, this is black or this is white? Why do I have, when jobs come, I would say, there's equal opportunity employer, so you must have some number for blacks. What is this? You have some number for women. What is this? All of these are people. Everybody should get his right because he is a human, because he's a human being. He's a creature of Allah Azza wa Jalla. This is what we have seen under capitalism, under the capitalism with the face of democracy. Again, one more time. In year 2000, I don't have the statistics or the exact numbers for 2011, but I'm pretty sure it's not a better picture. 791,000 young black men were in prison compared to only 600,000 people in colleges. That is racism. That is racial discrimination. That's a mess. That is something that the people don't want to see. That is the threat. That's the real threat. It's not Islam. Islam, the one that when Allah Azza wa Jalla says, Ya ayyuha an-nas, inna khalaqnakum min dhakarin wa untha wa ja'alnakum shu'uban wa qaba'il lita'arafu, inna akramakum 'inda Allahi atqakum. The best among you is not the white or with the blue eyes or the one who has more money, the one who's piety, the one whose heart is clean. Come on, let's talk about hearts. Those people who bombarded Baghdad, who have deprived millions of children of food, those people are still bombarding Pakistan today, in fact, with planes with no pilot, so that when the plane falls, they don't lose a pilot. Those are the ones that do not have the clean heart. The clean heart is the person who looks up to Allah Azza wa Jal as the creator, and I am a created being. I am not better than anyone else except in my devotion, in my spiritual devotion, in my behavioral devotion. That is where the comparison should be, not based on what I have just said. If you are black or a woman, and look at this, in fact, there is one more here. I'm talking about now poverty. Going to the next point, what does the world today have where the transition is taking place, where we are, what is it that we are moving away from? What is it that we are getting in? We are getting into, or the world is getting into Islam, and that's what we are proposing, our project to propose to the world, Islamic ideology, Islamic caliphate, Islamic khilafah, Islamic governance, and so on. We are moving into that, we are getting away from this. This is poverty. I'm talking about the United States here. This, about 16% of the people are poor. Now, this 16%, the makeup of them, the blacks and the Hispanics, that is not only poverty, it is pinpointed poverty against certain population of the, or against certain group of the population, against people of color, against people of different language, against people who do not belong to the so-called Anglo-Saxon race. That is not what Islam is proposing. That's not what we are bringing to the world after those revolutions. That's not what the people should be afraid of. The people, what they should be afraid of, what really makes a real threat. This is a real threat. Poverty, when we talk about 16% poverty, when you talk about out of these 16%, which is almost 16 million people who are under a certain poverty line, of them there is a large portion of people who are hungry. This is called severe hunger. There is a large portion of this population. And this is America. This is America that has the largest GDP in the world. That has the largest amount of wealth accumulated in the banks of the United States. If you talk about the rest of the world, it's even worse. Here, this figure that you see in front of your eyes, this is the number of people in the world who live under $1 a day, under $30 a month. Almost 1.5 billion people. And this one, when you go to $2 a day, which is still very poor, you have almost 3 billion people. Almost half of the world, half of those in Africa, in the Sahara, in Asia, in many places in the world, they live under $2 a day. That is despite the fact that there is lots of wealth in this world. Despite the fact there is lots of wealth, there is lots of oil, there is lots of gold, Allah Azza wa Jalla created in the world abundance of food. Allah did not make an earth or heavens which doesn't have enough food so that some people will starve. The starvation comes because of the system. Some because there is an ideology, there is a framework that systematically produces poor people. There is a machine, I call it the capitalist democratic machine, that continuously creates poor people, and you cannot get rid of this poverty. You cannot collect donations, say, brothers, sisters, let's collect some money to Africa. How much you are going to collect? You collect $1 billion today to feed maybe about 100 million people there, but tomorrow there will be 200 million more people who are more poor. How long you will be collecting money? You have to create a system that eliminates poverty altogether. You have to bring a system that, like Imam Ali radiallahu anhu, when he was the Khalifa of the Islamic State, he would say, if poverty were a man, I would fight it and kill it. Today we have a system that fights the poor people, not poverty. You have a system that fights the poor in Africa, the poor in Malaysia, the poor in Bangladesh, the poor in Pakistan. You have systems that fight and eliminate the poor. And I've heard it from many people that would say, oh, only if the world did not have that many population, then we would live much better life. Which means eliminate 3 billion people, the poor, and then we would have a good life. That is ridiculous. That's insane. That's capitalism. That's what the people should be moving away from, and not Islam that we are trying to bring to the world. In the places where the uprising are taking place, and I purposely put this slide here, I just want to pinpoint something about the debts. The debts, loans, they don't come simply because we want to be in debt. Debts come because there are machines and systems that put you in debt. There is the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, which have been created at the end of the Second World War to make sure that the world nations get indebted so that we can colonize these nations and we can occupy them and we can steal their wealth. And that's a fact. And today, in the Muslim world, the reason I made this for some of you, especially those who are deceived about the Turkish model. Turkey is being proposed today, let's have a Turkish model in Egypt. The model of Turkey in Egypt, in Syria, etc., because it's called moderate Islam. This is what we have in Turkey. The largest the largest Muslim country in debt, $267 billion out of debt. That's not what the Islam we want. We want an Islam that frees people of debt, because if you are indebted, you are enslaved. If you have debt, you are enslaved to the one who has indebted you. Didn't we see when the real estate market collapsed, how the people, many people, they went on the street, they lost their hands, their houses, they lost their wives, they lost their children, they became homeless, they are slain because of that huge debt. And I will come here on the issue, the most striking issue. When you talk Islam, honoring Islam and the Sharia of Islam says, oh, women are going to be deprived. The problem is with women. We are going to be to oppress women. And women are going, what is it, what is the type of oppression against women that we have? The scarf on the head? The long gown on the body, is that oppression? Do you call what is a protection? What is a form of protection, you call it oppression? When you get the women out of their clothes, naked, nude, sexual bodies, sexual toys, all of these, is that mercy? Is that what we want the people to have? Or this is what we want here, where you have the many of the women are sexually abused, the rape, the transmitted diseases, and so on and so forth. I could go on this list. You can go search it. Google today doesn't leave anything behind. You can find all of these about what is happening with the plight of women today. That's not what Islam is proposing. Islam is proposing a system where the woman is a mother, the woman is a wife, the woman is a daughter, the woman is a sister, the woman is a being that has to be protected by all means. Islam, in some occasions, allows me to say, if I protect a woman with my own body, with all my own life, I am just like as a martyr. Martyr means Allah Azza wa Jal will grant you heaven without any questioning, simply for the protection of a woman. The women in Islam are the most protected being, financially stable, financially. In this, Islam is the only religion system that comes from ever existed in this world, where it defines exactly that a woman has a right to inheritance. Even in this country, in the United States, which is supposedly one of their so-called advanced democratic states, woman does not have the right to inheritance. If I decide to write in my will, all my money, my wealth goes to a dog, my daughter doesn't get anything. She doesn't get anything. In Islam, I can't do that. In Islam, I leave a wealth behind me, my mother has a right into it, my daughter has a right into it, my sister has a right into it, my wife has a right into it, every woman has a right into it. Whether that right is big or small, that's irrelevant. We can talk the math offline, if you will. But at least Islam defines that right. No system in the world ever defined that right. Not even in the most advanced so-called democratic capitalistic states in the world. And you know the laws more than I do. That is where Islam comes in. And let's talk about the justice. Here I want to mention something about the state of Islam, the state of Khilafah. Is it a state of dictatorship? Is it someone who is on top of this world, of this Islamic state? He rules from the top of his head? Read, if you will, Noah Feldman, when he wrote about the fall and the rise of the Islamic state. He bluntly, explicitly says, he's a professor of political science at Harvard, he says, Islamic state is a state of law. It's a state of law, and the law is derived from well-defined text. It is not defined from the whims or from the wishes of someone who sits somewhere with harems, with harems, with women around him as they portray that. This is a state of law where the laws are derived from well-defined text, from the Quran, from the Sunnah, and there is a parade of scholars throughout the 1300 years who have derived and produced laws after laws, and they are well-defined. And there are schools of thought. Not even the other advanced country like in Britain. The laws in Britain, these are not well-defined laws. Read how the constitutions and the laws in Britain are defined. These comes as verdicts that come from judges Who God knows how they made those judgments at any point of time. Whereas in Islam defines, in the Islamic state of Khilafah, the laws are well defined, and they are in books, they are in literature. This is not simply something that you make up only as you go. This is a state of law, and the laws. One more statement here I have to say. Where does justice come from? When you say there is a law, what is it that causes a verdict to be unjust? Where is the cause of oppression? There are two causes for oppression and injustice. One, the law that you are using that has been derived from someone who has certain inclinations, any inclination, any wishes, any type of desires. Yes, which if I have certain desires, today when you make a law against the guns in this country, owning guns, who impacts that law? The Rifle Association lobbyists, they impact the law. So the law that comes, it has inclination. And the one who implements the law has his own inclinations, of course. But if the law itself is being made by someone who has his own desires, inclinations, that law is not just. That's bias. There is a bias there. The only source of laws that ever existed in this world that are unbiased, that doesn't have bias inherently from within, they are not biased, are the ones that come from God. Why? Because God, Allah Azza wa Jal, He tells us in the Quran, look, I don't have buddies, I don't have a woman, I don't have children, I don't have a mother, I don't have a father, I am one. I am alone, I am Ahad, Samad, and no one with me. Therefore, this God has no inclinations whatsoever. So if the laws come from Him, they are just from within. They are inherently just. And the laws that are made by our fathers, by our grandfathers, by our ancestors, by our buddies, by our friends, they are biased. I have biases, he has biases, she has biases. Every one of us has bias. We accumulate bias as we go. We cannot get rid of our biases, we can reduce them. But it's impossible to get rid of your biases. This child, as he grows biased to his parents. That's natural. You have wealth, you are biased toward protecting your health. That's natural. Therefore, I shall not allow you to be the sole responsible for making the laws. Because you are biased for your wealth. You are biased for your color. The whites have made laws in this country, and for those laws, we still have whole nations deprived until today. Let's face that. So in Islam, when we present Islam, when we say this is Islam is coming, brothers and sisters and people of the world, this Islam is just from within. It is inherently just. Now, I will move to the last topic. I know my time, I'm running out of time. 2 minutes? Okay. The story is clear. You can read about the scale that is being spread around from the Sharia. That is unfounded scare. It's unfounded scare. The fact that Islam is an ideology that can bring world prosperity and mercy is founded. There are 1,300 years of history. Read. We have more data to present than capitalism and democracy has. Capitalism and democracy has less than 100 years of data to present. And it's an ugly data. We've just seen that. Islam has 1,300 years of data. Read it. Look at it. Historians have read it, and they talked about it. Bernard Shaw talked about it. Montgomery Watt talked about it. Alan Watt has talked about it. There are many people who have talked about Islam. Read it. It's in the history. It is there. 1,300 years of data cannot be ignored simply because you say, oh, there are some Muslims who have done this act or that act, and let me just to be sure here to say, there are acts that the people are scared of, so-called terrorism and terrorists. Terrorism and terrorists, whether they are committed by Muslims or non-Muslims, it's always the environment that breeds terrorism. Terrorism does not come out of ideologies. There is no ideology that talks about terrorism. Not capitalism, not democracy, not Islam, not nationalism, not socialism. Let's be blunt, but the environment that you create, the system of injustice, is the one that creates terrorism, that recruits people of all types of faiths, whether they are Muslims or non-Muslims. Islam has nothing to do with them. Let's be clear on this issue. So Islam does not bring the world something to fear from. Islam brings the world something to be proud of. And I, as a Muslim, my role is to promote this. My role is to stand up for them. My role is to stand up and support the return and the resurgence of a civilization that breeds progress, a civilization that eliminates poverty, a civilization that allows the people to prosper based on their own merit, not based on their color or their money or their wealth. A civilization that brings brotherhood, real brotherhood among nations. A civilization that breaks the borders between the people. That's my role. My role is to promote that, is to support that, is to stand up for that. My role is to be on the side of historical change. Because if I'm not on this side, I am on the side of something that's fading away. And this group that is organizing this conference, and this is just to make sure that we know what is it that we want. This group, Hizb al-Tahrir, that has started more than 60 years ago to create this model, the model of an Islamic state, the model of Islamic Khilafah, the model of where Islamic system is implemented, the model that will be achieved and can be achieved through non-violent means. And I stress on this. The group that was created or that was established in the early 50s, when everybody at the time was holding a gun in his hand, there was the Cold War was just starting, and the so-called national liberation movements were based on weaponry, based on military activities. Hizb al-Tahrir came in the world and they said, this is not the way to go. To build a civilization, a political system, you have to be political and ideological. You cannot be violent in implementing something that is merciful. You can't do that. You have to follow a method of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, who was able to build an Islamic state, an Islamic entity, without firing a single bullet, without hitting with a single hit of a sword, without spilling a single drop of blood. This is how you bring Islam. And today, when the revolutions in the Middle East started coming with non-violent means, everybody is applauding, which is good. But Hizb al-Tahrir has stated that and confirmed that right from the very beginning. This is the way to go. This is the way to go, to build the public opinion, public awareness, to support all of that, so that the world, the people will understand this Islam as an ideology brings prosperity. This Islam brings progress. This Islam brings this marriage between soul and matter, material, spiritual bond, that this ideology of capitalism has stripped us away from. You are material being and material being only. Your soul can exist only in a church. Once you are out of the church, you can act as a wolf and you will be welcomed and celebrated. Islam does not approve that. You have to be spiritually high in the masjid, spiritually high in the street. You have to bring all your behavior, all your concepts, all your values, descend from this revelation from Allah Azza wa Jal. And that's why we call this the revolution by revelation. This is the revelation from Allah Azza wa Jal. The values that we want to install are from Allah Azza wa Jal. The values we want to install in the society are from Allah. The systems are from Allah. The Khalifa himself, when he governs, he doesn't govern by his whims, by his thoughts, by his wishes. He has to, when the contract of the Khalifa, that's what we put in our constitution. Today they are bargaining about constitutions, playing all types of games. The very first amendment in the constitution by the Khalifa, that it is a contract between the man and the people. The people give him the contract that he has to rule them with what Allah has revealed, not with what he wants to rule them with. And if he doesn't comply with that, he's out. This is what we are bringing the world. And that is what this group is about. And that's why we tell the people that Hizb al-Tahrir is marching towards victory, not against nations. We are marching towards victory for the whole humanity. The whole humanity will be victorious when Islam is up. The whole humanity will be victorious when Islam is ruling. The whole humanity will benefit from that. And the threat of capitalism and will be gone and will fade away with the rise of Islam. Jazakumullahu
khairan.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Podcasts on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran tafsir, and Sirah are available at islampodcasts.com, as well as on iTunes. Rate, review, and comment, and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please subscribe, share, and tell a friend about IslamPodcast.com.